5 days before the phenomena at Temple Moor were first reported, this town was raided. The town hall was burned down, and other buildings were destroyed. Temple Moor was terrorized. All shops were closed. Few persons dared to be seen in the streets. On the road to Temple Moor there was not a cart. The town was partly in ruins. It was godforsaken and shilling and pence deserted. I take from the Tipperary Star. In Dwan's house, and in the house of his sister-in-law, Mrs. Marr, where lived and worked the young man, James Walsh, statues started to bleed simultaneously. This news sneaked up and down the roads. Its carriers were stealths amidst desolation and ruin. Then they scurried from farm to farm, and people were coming out from their homes. They went to Temple Moor to see. Then they went in droves. The roads began to hum. Sounds of tramping and the creaking of wheels, men and horses and primitive old carts and slickest of new cars from cities. It was medievalism honked with horns or one of the Crusades, with chariots slinging out beer bottles, and anachronism is just one more of the preposterous errors of life, nature, or an organism, or whomever, or whatever may be the artist that does these things. The roads began to roar. Strings of people became ropes of marching thousands. Hope and curiosity, piety and hilarity, and the incentive to make it a holiday, out for the fun of it, out to write letters to the newspapers, exposing the fakery of it, out to confirm religious teachings. But maybe all this cannot be explained in terms only of known human feelings. It was as enormous as some of the other movements of living things that I shall tell of. Then the news that was exciting Ireland was going out to the world. The terror that chanting processions were threading may have had relation with these rhythms of marchers. They were singing their song of the long, long way, and then arriving shiploads took up the song. Messrs. Cook, the tourist agents, sent inquiries as to whether the inns of Temple Moor could provide for 2,000 pilgrims from England. Scotchmen and Englishmen and Frenchmen, tourist agencies in the United States, European countries, and Japan sent inquiries. Waves that billowed from this excitement beat upon Table Mountain, South Africa, and in the surf that fell upon Cape Town, people bobbed into a committee that was sent to investigate. Drops of blood from a statue in Ireland and a trickle of turbans down a gangway at Bombay. A band of pilgrims set out from Bombay. I am far from making a religion of it, but whatever was directing all this would make hats come off at Hollywood. Also, whether somebody was monkeying with red ink, or not, is getting lost in this story. Because of a town that the world had never before heard of, Paris and London were losing Americans. Other phenomena, which may have been teleportations, were reported. In the earthen floor of the Walsh boys' room, a hollow, about the size of a teacup, filled with water. No matter how it was drained and thousands of persons took away quantities water, from an unknown source, always returned to this appearing point. The subject of holy wells occurs to me, as a field of neglected data. Everything that I can think of occurs to me as a field of disregard and neglect. Statues in Walsh's room bled, that's the story, and, as in poltergeist doings or as in other poltergeist doings, objects moved about in an invisible force. I take notice of these stories of objects that moved in the presence of a boy, because scarcely can it be said that they were of value to priestcraft, and it can be said that they are common in accounts of occult phenomena of adolescence. I now offer as satisfactory an expression upon phenomena at Temple Moor, as has ever been conceived of by human mind. A Darwin writes a book about species. By what constitutes a species? He does not know. A Newton explains all things in terms of gravitation. But what is gravitation? But he has stopped. I explain the occurrences at Temple Moor in terms of poltergeist phenomena. Any questions? But I claim scientific license for myself, too. Marvelous cures were reported at Temple Moor. What teleportations have to do with cures, I don't see, but I do see that if people believe that any marvel, such as a new arrival at a zoo, has curative powers, there will be a pile of crutches outside the cage of that thing. Walkers, bicyclists, motor cars, donkey carts, lorries, charabancs, wheelbarrows with cripples in them, jaunting cars, special trains rushing from Dublin. Some of the quietest old towns were in uproars. Towns all around and towns far away were reporting streets resounding with tramping thousands. There were not rooms enough in the towns. From storms of people, drifts slept on doorsteps. Temple Moor, partly in ruins, stood black in the center of a wide growth of tents. This new city, mostly of tents, was named Pilgrimsville. I have not taken up definite accounts of the bleeding statues. See statements published in various issues of the Tipperary Star. They are positively convincing, or they are fairy stories for grown-up brats. I could fill pages, if I wanted to, but that would imply that I think there is any meaning in solemn assertions, or in sworn testimony, with hands on Bibles. For instance, I have notes upon an account by Daniel Egan, a harness maker of Temple Moor, of blood that he had seen oozing from a statue, but the statement may be attributed to a sense of civic responsibility. He would be a bad citizen who would testify otherwise, considering the profit that was flowing into Temple Moor. The town's druggist, a man of what is said to be education, stated that he had seen the phenomena. He was piling up a fortune from people who had caught bad colds sleeping in the fields. I suppose that some of them had come devoutly from far away, but had begun to sneeze, and had backslid from piety to pills. However, something that I cannot find a hint of is that either Dwan or the Mars charged admission. At first, people were admitted in batches of 50, somebody, holding a watch, saying, "Every 5 minutes, time, please." Soon Dwan and the Mars placed the statues in windows, for all to see. There were crowds all day, and torchlight processions moved past these windows all night. The blood that was shed in Ireland continued to pour from human beings, but the bleeding statues stopped, or statements that statues were bleeding stopped. However, wherever the water was coming from, it continued to flow from the appearing point in the Walsh boy's room. In the Tipperary Star, September 25, the estimate is that, in about 1 month, 1 million persons had visited Pilgrimsville. To some degree the excitement kept up the rest of the year. They were threading terror with their peaceful processions. They marched through a terrible toll of bloodshed, wild scenes at Nenagh, the Banshaw horror. Past burned and blackened fields in which corpses were lying, streamed these hundreds of thousands, chanting their song of the long, long way, damning the farmers, who were charging them 2 shillings apiece for hard-boiled eggs, praying, raiding chicken houses, telling their beads, stealing bicycles. Mr. John McDonnell gave a pilgrim a lift, and was robbed of £2.50. But one of these detachments enters a town. In another street, a man runs from a house. "My God, I'm shot." Not far away the steady sound of tramping pilgrims. These flows of beings are as mysterious as the teleportations of substances. They may mean an organic control, or maintenance of balance, even in a part that is diseased with bombs and ambuscades and arson. But it is impossible, except to the hopelessly pious, to consider, with anything like veneration, any such maintenance of a balance, because, if a god of order be conceived of, also is he, or it, a god of murder. But, regarded aesthetically, sometimes there are effects that are magnificent. Bloody Sunday in the County Cork. But, upon this day, somewhere upon every road in Ireland is maintained a rhythm. Somewhere, a lorry of soldiers is moving down a road. Out of bushes come bullets, and the sides of the car are draped with a droop of dead men. Not far away, men and women and children are marching. Along the roads of distracted Ireland, steady pulsations of people and people and people. 7. Nose in the mud, and the bend of a thing to the ground. There are postures from which life is acting to escape, one of them, the embryonic crouch, another, whether in the degradation of worship, or as a convenience in eating grass, the bend of a neck to the ground. The all-day gnaw of the fields. But the eater of meat is released from the munch. One way to broaden horizons is to climb a tree, but another way is to stand on one's own hind legs, away from the grass. a Bernard Shaw dines on hay, and still looks behind for a world that's far ahead. These are the disgusts for vegetarians, felt by the planters of Ceylon, in July, 1910. Very likely, I am prejudiced, myself. Perhaps I think that it is gross and brutal to eat anything at all. Why stop at vegetarianism? Vegetarianism is only a semi-ideal. The only heavenly thing to do is to do nothing. It is gross and brutal and animal-like to breathe. We contribute to the records of strange alarms. There was one in Ceylon. Gigantic vegetarians were eating trees. Millions of foreigners, big African snails, Aethina fulica, had suddenly appeared, massed in the one small district of Kalutara, near Colombo. Shells of the largest were 6 inches long. One of them that weighed 3/4 of a pound was exhibited at the Colombo Museum. They were crowded, or massed, in one area of 4 square miles. One of the most important of the data is that this was in one of the mostly thickly populated parts of Ceylon. But nothing had been seen of these gigantic snails, until suddenly trees turned knobby with the monsters. It was as surprising as it would be, in New York, going out one morning, finding everything covered with huge warts. In Colombo was shown a photograph of a tree trunk, upon the visible part of which 227 snails were counted. The ground was as thick with them as were the trees.